thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at.
Invest in our educators, invest in our schools, invest in the future of this great city, and most importantly, our students.
Chicago's Board of Education delays a vote on a budget amendment as talks over the teachers' contract continue. Authorities sue ICE and other federal authorities over claims of illegal arrest in the Chicago area. And some Venezuelans in Chicago face new challenges as they're set to lose temporary protected status. And now to some of today's top stories. President Donald Trump has signed an executive order to dismantle and close the Department of Education, saying it has been years in the making. At an event held at the White House today, the president announced the order directs Education Secretary Linda McMahon to minimize the agency and return educational authority to the states. The department is responsible for distributing funding and grants to states. Ultimately, it will be up to Congress to officially approve the closure of the department. However, the administration has already begun to scale back operations and reduce the number of department employees in a number of layoffs.
We're going to be returning education very simply back to the states where it belongs. And this is a very popular thing to do, but much more importantly, it's a common sense thing to do, and it's going to work. Absolutely, it's going to work. And I can tell you from dealing with the governors and others in the state, they want it so badly. They want to take their children back and really teach their children individually.
The administration says student loans and Pell Grants will still be managed by the department. Meanwhile, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says more than $3 billion in federal education funding for the state could be at risk.
That is money that can't be replaced by the state government. $3.5 billion is, we can't do that, not especially on top of the $7 or $8 billion that I suspect they will cut from Medicaid from the state of Illinois. So this is, we're in dire straits if they cut this funding from Washington, D.C.
In a separate move, the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights launched an investigation today into the State Education Department, Chicago Public Schools, and the Deerfield Public Schools for accommodating trans students. A Deerfield parent complained that her teen daughter was forced to change in a locker room in front of a, quote, biological male. But Deerfield officials say no student is ever forced to change publicly. Meanwhile, millions of Illinois residents' Social Security benefits could be at risk. That was Governor J.B. Pritzker's message today at an event in suburban Romeoville as part of his Standing Up for Illinois tour. Pritzker and other officials say the Trump administration's attacks on Social Security Administration could mean delays, missed checks, or wrongly denied claims. The agency has announced plans to reduce its workforce and close some field offices. The governor says some 2 million Illinois residents rely on Social Security benefits. And local postal workers are speaking out against the potential privatization of the Postal Service. Chicago was one of more than 150 cities where workers demonstrated today. They say if the United States Postal Service were sold, it would raise rates and shutter local post offices. The move comes as agency leadership earlier this week agreed to cut 10,000 workers and billions from its budget. Up next, no movement on a CPS budget amendment yet. We catch up right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
The Chicago Board of Education calls off a vote today to cover a $175 million pension payment amid intense opposition. The move deals a significant blow to Mayor Brandon Johnson and threatens the city's financial stability. Let's listen to Board President Sean Hardin make the announcement.
We're extremely, extremely close to settling the teachers' union contract. So as a result, the budget amendment and related items have been withdrawn from today's agenda. And these items will be brought back to the board at a later date for consideration. We're very pleased with the progress. So steady the ship, and we hope to be able to come back very soon with that resolve.
Here to break it down for us is WTTW News reporter Heather Sharon. All right, Heather. Mayor Brandon Johnson said in a statement that Hardin called off the vote because of negotiations over a new contract with the Chicago Teachers Union, which he said was extremely close to being finalized. Is that what happened here?
It's part of the story, but it's certainly not the whole story. The city and the Chicago Teachers Union, by all accounts, are very close to a new agreement, but they're not quite there yet. But the real issue is that $175 million pension payment that CPS has known for 6 months that the city was insisting it make, but yet it did not set aside any money in its budget. Nor did they set aside any money to pay for that new contract with the teachers and the union that represents the Principals Association. Mayor Brandon Johnson wanted them to sort of fill this budget gap today, but there simply weren't enough votes on the board to do it. And in politics, if you don't have the votes, you don't vote.
And take us back. Remind us what the board has been expected to vote on and what the mayor had been asking them to do.
Well, there is about a shortfall of about $240 million in the school's budget. That's enough to cover the pension payment and pay for the new contracts. The mayor says let's borrow that money and get through this short-term crisis and figure out how to put the school district on firmer financial condition next year. The board, however, is not convinced that that's the way to go, and that opposition is being led by CPS CEO Pedro Martinez, who has repeatedly called this plan fiscally irresponsible, and this is the issue that led to the deep breach between the CEO and the mayor and prompted the last Board of Education, all appointed by the mayor, to fire him. But Martinez, he's in office until June.
Now, this might be the question of the hour. What is preventing a deal on a new teacher's contract?
Well, the big issue seems to be the amount of time that elementary school teachers have to prepare for their day. Back before this sort of current era, they had 30 minutes. That was slashed by former Mayor Rahm Emanuel. They wanted that 30 minutes back. CPS has said, how about 10 more minutes? And CTU has said, we can settle on 20 minutes. No agreement on that yet.
So what happens now?
Well, if CPS and CTU can reach an agreement, maybe this budget amendment comes back next week before the CPS board. If it doesn't, it will be up to the city council to figure out what to do, and that will put the city in a precarious financial position because, oh yeah, they don't have the $175 million either.
Well, thank you, Heather, for that update.
Thanks, Joanna.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Local activists are saying federal immigration agents violated the rights of 22 people, including a U.S. citizen, in arrests made in the first few weeks of President Trump's term. Attorneys who filed a lawsuit earlier this week say the arrests violated 2022 agreement between local organizations and the federal government that restricts Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers from making warrantless and collateral arrests. The agreement covers Illinois and five other states. Joining us now with more is Karen Zewick, Director of Litigation at the National Immigrant Justice Center. Thank you for joining us. Now, as I mentioned, the lawsuit claims ICE unlawfully arrested 22 individuals since President Trump took office. Can you explain at this point what the families seek from the lawsuit filed by the NIJC and the ACLU of Illinois?
Yes, thank you for having me. As you mentioned in the lead, we filed a motion to enforce a 2022 settlement on behalf of 22 individuals whom we believe were unlawfully arrested in violation of the settlement from 2022. The motion demands that people who remain in immigration custody now be released without being required to pay bond or be subject to conditions, and that people who have already been released and paid a bond, that those bond funds be returned. And also, because there were so many violations in such a short period of time, 22 violations in just a few weeks, we are arguing that there is a pattern of disregard for the settlement. And so we are asking for additional oversight from the court to prevent this from happening going forward.
And Karen, I want to go back. The National Immigrant Justice Center sued the Trump administration over immigration sweeps back in 2018 during the president's first term, which led to a settlement in 2022. How has the president violated the settlement during the first weeks of his second term?
Right. So this case is actually a motion to enforce that settlement from that previous case. And the violations here are numerous. For example, one of the individuals in this case is, in fact, a U.S. citizen. Immigration officials detained him and handcuffed him, did not ask him any questions about his citizenship, held him for more than about 10 hours, and released him without any documentation of the fact that they had ever had him in their custody to begin with. So all of that is in violation of the settlement because they arrested a person without probable cause that he was, in fact, not a U.S. citizen, and then they failed to document that. They arrested many other individuals without warrants, oftentimes in the community and oftentimes in violent and aggressive manners. And then they're trying to circumvent the settlement by issuing what I'll say are warrants in the field, but I'm putting that in scare quotes because those warrants are issued only after a person is already in handcuffs or already what we would say in custody of the police. And then they're trying to scramble to issue what I'll call post hoc warrants in the field after those arrests have already been made. And even in doing that, they're violating the policies that they would be required to follow to complete an administrative warrant.
And the lawsuit sheds light on the arrest of Abel Orozco Ortega from the Chicago suburbs, who has been detained since January. His son, Eduardo Ortega, gave an emotional testimony at a news conference this week. Let's take a listen.
ICE is doing things that they're not supposed to. They're arresting people who they're not supposed to. They're stating that they're arresting thousands and thousands of hardcore criminals. My father is not a criminal.
And Karen, as we just heard, the son, Eduardo, saying that his father is no criminal. He has no criminal record. What can you tell us about his case?
Well, as Eduardo said, Mr. Orozco has been in the United States for over 27 years. He owns a landscaping company, and he's never been arrested for any criminal action in his entire life. As Eduardo put it in that same interview that you just quoted from, he just goes to work and he comes back to his family. He's a loving and caring and responsible person. He's someone to look up to and an honest person. Mr. Orozco's detention has forced the business to close, the landscaping business that he owned, that employed 5 to 10 people at any given time. So it's just evidence of what happens when it's not just about the one person who is arrested, but these kinds of things have effects for not just that person, but their families and many people beyond.
And Karen, how could have this, how could this have happened?
So in this particular situation, Mr. Orozco was living with, he was living with other members of his family, and ICE claims to have been coming to the house to make an arrest for somebody else. But they were not looking for him, and they took him because he was there, and that's what they're doing in the situation that they call that a collateral arrest, and they are willingly and openly admitting that anybody who happens to be in the presence of others who are subject to these circumstances are vulnerable.
Would you say these are some of the constant patterns that you've been seeing?
Yes, for sure. One of the biggest patterns, in fact, is this targeting of collateral, the use of collateral arrests. So what that means is ICE will go into the field with a claim that they're looking for one specific person, and they will use against that one specific person as pretext to arrest any people that they find along the way in the course of looking for that one specific person. Even if they don't really think that that person is going to be there, or even maybe they don't actually believe that the person is in the place where they are supposedly looking.
Now, Karen, the lawsuit also alleges a lack of transparency. Do we know who ICE has arrested in Chicago and the Midwest?
Frankly, no, we don't. The 22 examples are just a small slice of what we know based on the a limited amount of the limited amount of capacity that we have to screen people on a quick turnaround. And we know that there are many more. We already have another batch of violations of the settlement that we plan to bring to the court's attention too. And so I think that the truth of the matter is we don't know, but what we do know is that ICE continues to claim that they are going after people whom they would characterize as the worst of the worst, but none of these individuals meets that criteria by even any stretch of the imagination. Most of them have had no interaction with the criminal justice system ever in their lives.
Well, thank you. We're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Up next, a major change looms for some Venezuelans in Chicago. Stay with us. In just a few weeks, tens of thousands of Venezuelans in Illinois could be put at risk for deportation. That's because of the Trump administration's move to cut short the 2023 temporary protected status for Venezuelans. It's set to end on April 7th. However, the change does not affect the 2021 protected designation, which expires in September. Without these protections, many Venezuelans become undocumented and could lose financial assistance, work permits, and other benefits. Joining us with more on the local impact are Daisy Funes, executive director of Centro Romero, Maria Scatechi, a Venezuelan with protected status and co-owner of the restaurant Rica Arepa, and Hannah Blackwell, an immigration attorney. Thank you all for joining us on this important topic. Daisy, I want to start with you. As we know, Centro Romero has been assisting Venezuelans in settling in Chicago for years. How could the end of protected status affect their stability?
Really, it has been very difficult for us because Centro Romero is in the front line attending and assisting all the Venezuelans have a right to Chicago. And one of the things that I can tell you is most of them had come back to Centro Romero looking for help. Where do I go now? Because they're not only losing their permit to stay here legally and work, they're losing the benefits of receiving temporary assistance, financial assistance, housing assistance, and some of the Medicaid, Medicare card.
And those are some of the things that Centro Romero has been helping
exactly.
them with.
Exactly. So our legal clinic has been also making sure they're doing the right things that don't and do in the United States. And now they just feel they're empty.
So they this affects anything. Them overall.
Exactly, because now the places they used to work, they're asking them to bring the permit. So they're losing their job. They're losing their housing. So Centro Romero right now is trying to make sure that they know their rights, what to do if immigration comes, what are your rights, because even though you're undocumented, you still have rights in this country.
Yes, but it seems like it's going to be a challenge.
It's going to be a challenge.
And Hannah, I want to bring you in. Briefly remind us what the temporary protected status is and what it allows.
Absolutely. Temporary protected status is for, it's designated to particular countries around the world. Venezuela, for instance, right now, but it's for any country that the Department of Homeland Security deems as having consequences or circumstances going on in their country that make it unsafe to send those people back to. So, for instance, right now, whether it's a disaster going on, whether it's political corruption, something like that.
So you would say taking this away from them put them at risk?
Catastrophic, absolutely catastrophic. Yes.
And Maria, I want to talk a bit about your story. You came to the U.S. in 2014 from Venezuela and have the 2021 protected status until September. You also have built a business in Chicago with your family. How would you say that this will affect you?
Well, right now, our family, it's been feeling anxiety and all these emotions that we have, fear, most of them, because we don't know what's going to happen. As our family and a businesswoman, we have employees, we have clients, we have everyone that depends on this TPS to be here and to work. and to have, you know, to have a future, because that's the reason why we came here, to have a better opportunities, to have a place that we can feel safe but also grow.
Would you say that's the message when people don't understand why Venezuelans come here?
Correct, yes. We have a fear to be in our country because our country doesn't give us what we need, as human beings. That's what we came here looking for.
Yeah, and Maria, would you say that you have concerns over your employees?
Because some of them have the 2023 TPS designation too, and it's so hard because they have family, they have babies, they have, you know, we need to support them, but also, as she mentioned, we need to ask them for the, you know, the requirements that we are obligated to ask for. So it's so hard right now.
It's a tough position right now.
It's a really tough position.
Now I want to mention the Department of Homeland Security said about this change, and they said, we are returning integrity to the temporary protected status system, which has been abused and exploited by illegal aliens for decades. President Trump and Secretary Noem are returning TPS to its original status temporarily. Daisy, what are your thoughts on this belief? Some people have that Venezuelan migrants are exploiting the system.
I don't think so. You know, it's easy to blame any economic system situation to a new group, because that has been happening for generations. So immigrants, if we look at immigrants, they come and contribute to this country. They're taxpayers. Right. They're citizens. They're people who bring the same expertise. They have the same values as all the Americans here. Want a better family, want a better business. They are men who are working. There's a few apples, but that doesn't mean the communities in general. Yeah. You know, it's a hardworking community, so they're contributors. And people think they're taking, they take. No, they gave. They pay taxes. Every time they work, they have a permit, and they've been paying taxes legally in this country. So it is a benefit for all.
What are your thoughts, Hannah?
Not only that, this is a designation by the U.S. government. So it's not an exploitation by the people. They're not asking for this. This is granted to them. Yes, you have to apply, but this is available to all. This is not an exploitation.
And can some of them apply for political asylum?
Absolutely. Any kind of asylum is available to anyone who does have a valid fear of persecution in their home country, mm-hmm. based on protected grounds, right? There are limitations. Mm-hmm. But these people, not only are they eligible for TPS, they can be eligible for asylum, maybe even a family petition if they have a family member who's a U.S. citizen
Would
or permanent
say,
resident.
That's some of the alternatives?
Definitely the alternatives. Mm-hmm. And I do see a lot of people who currently have TPS also have an asylum application pending as well, mm-hmm. whether with the courts or with USCIS. And they're going to have to fall back on that, unfortunately, as this is being stripped away.
And Maria, we understand this change brings a lot of uncertainty you just mentioned. Now, suppose you and your family lose protection. What do you think would be your next steps? I mean, you talk about building a business here.
Yeah, correct. We, for sure, are not going to go back to Venezuela. We can't. We can't. And I have a family, and I need to start thinking that what we're going to do next. So maybe a third country. At this point, we're not certain of anything.
Is these stories, Daisy, that you
yes.
constantly hear at Centro Romero?
Every time, every day. We have line of people outside of our offices coming, what is my next step? Definitely no one has said that they're going back. No one. So we just still, like, they still have a permit. We're still legally, so we still encourage them to you do your taxes, do the things that you're supposed to be doing, but there's no option. So, but one of the things that we're doing, and we're proud of it, we are telling them, know your rights. Know your rights presentation in the community, even if it's not for you, it's for your friends, for your business. So understand what rights are here.
Which has been a really big focus.
Correct.
And Hannah, there's a California lawsuit seeking to bring back the temporary protected status extension, which was set to expire in October 2026. This is one of countless lawsuits the Trump administration is facing. Can these legal challenges make a difference and stop the change?
The only way that these legal challenges can make a difference is if the courts, the people, the Department of Justice actually enforces them against the executive branch, against Congress, against whoever is in combat to those orders. So it's very exciting that this order is out there and that it's this is pending, and that's available. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of faith in it.
Yeah. And Maria, we only have a couple seconds, but again, I mentioned you've been living here, you made a life here. You know, what does this community in Chicago mean to you?
Chicago is home for me right now. And I don't think, I cannot imagine being in another country right now, because this is my home. This is the place where I built my family and I built everything.
Happened to go to your restaurant yesterday without knowing you were going to be our guest, which La Arepas, I have to say, were really good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on this topic.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show for this Thursday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Weekend Review. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.